buy2wayradios.com. Check, check. Buy2wayradios.com.
Recorded almost live from Rock Hill, South Carolina. It's the Two-Way Radio Show.
And welcome to the Two-Way Radio Show. I'm Rick Savoia.
And I'm Danny Feenster.
And this is the podcast about two-way radios for business and consumer communications. Today we'll discuss bills proposed to allow ham radio operators to erect antennas in a deed-restricted community, or HOA. We'll also take some of your comments and questions from our blog and our forum. Our show is sponsored by buy2wayradios.com, the source of two-way radios and radio accessories for businesses and consumers since 2002. Buy2wayradios.com, your radio specialists. In 2023, a bipartisan bill of particular interest to amateur radio operators was introduced to the United States House of Representatives. Titled Amateur Radio Emergency Preparedness Act, this bill proposed to amend the Communications Act of 1934 to prohibit the application of certain private land use restrictions to amateur radio antennas and for other purposes. What is this bill about? Could it pass? And if it does become law, how would it potentially impact an amateur radio operator who resides in a deed-restricted community, such as a homeowners association?
Yeah, this is a good topic. Over the years, we've seen, I think, several of these bills pop up, haven't we, Rick?
We have.
There's always a huge problem for hams. They want to put up a big antenna, and there's some kind of restriction in some neighborhood, and they're prevented from doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't like that.
This is a very interesting bill because, first of all, this is a bipartisan bill, and this is Bill H.R. 4006. And as I mentioned, it's to amend the Communications Act of 1934. This was sponsored by Bill Johnson, and he introduced it in 2023. And it is currently going through the House, and it's been picked up and also co-sponsored by Mr. Pfluger and I think a few other representatives. And this is an interesting situation because, as you just mentioned, this is not the first time such a bill has been set up and proposed. It's been done before. I think the one of the original ones was the was H.R. 555 and the Senate bill, I think, 1534. And this was called the Amateur Radio Parity Act, or ARPA. And at the time, there was a lot of initially there was a lot of excitement about this, because for those living in HOAs or deed restricted communities overall, ham radio operators really couldn't put up antennas, or they got a lot of pushback from their associations for doing so. And
usually this, because the antennas are thought of as being unsightly, they detract from the look of the house, and they're thought to maybe bring property values down. Is that the argument on the HOA side?
That's the basic argument, although I have a few other thoughts on HOAs myself. We'll get to that a little bit later in the discussion. But the thing is that this bill was held up and eventually pretty much done in by one senator, and that was Bill Nelson of Florida. It was a Democrat from Florida. And he basically killed the bill, pretty much. There was a lot of mixed feeling about that at the time because – at the outset, the ARRL was really on board with this. A lot of hams were on board of it, with it. But as time went on, and as you know, as the bills go through, you know, the process of being supported, endorsed, and that sort of thing. There are changes made to it. And some of those changes were enabled by a really, really huge lobby group, and that would be the National Association of HOAs. And for obvious reasons, they were not really happy about, because that basically kind of takes – some power away from them in a sense, or it's perceived to do so. So they didn't like that. So there were a lot of changes made to that bill. So by the time it got to where they were going to vote on it, that's where it kind of died. And by the time some of those changes were made, I think a lot of the hams no longer really thought, well, this is a, you know, this is a good bill. They were thinking, well, this is kind of a bad deal. So it basically died. But since then...
So are there better prospects for the current bill?
Well, I hope so. It's been rewritten a little bit, and we're not going to read the bill pretty much in its entirety, but you can go there. You can look at the bill. We'll put a link in the show notes to the current bill in a PDF format so anyone can read it. I think it's a better written bill. And I think it, as I recall, I think currently, I think the ARL has some support for it. There are more senators, I think, on here, or more representatives, I should say, that are on board with this at this time. And it's been looked at, it's been set up and put through there to be referred to various subcommittees. And right now, I think it's in the Subcommittee for Communications and Technology, and then it's been referred to the House Committee on Energy and Commerce. And it's been sitting there for a while. Now, this was first introduced in 2023. Right now, as it stands right now, there was a similar bill, basically the same bill, that was introduced in January 30th of 2024. And the sponsor of this one was Senator Wicker, Roger Wicker. And it was read twice and referred to the Committee on Commerce, Science, and Transportation. So that's basically where it is right now. And I don't know if that's where some of these bills go to die. You know? I mean, they've been referred.
It sounds like we're still very early in the process.
Yeah,
I would think, from what you're telling me.
The problem is sometimes those bills get set aside and then long forgotten, and then they just kind of.
What does the bill actually do
on their own?
If this passes, are you allowed to have any kind of antenna you want, or does it still allow HOAs to put some restrictions?
Well, the bill 3690 basically it just says to prohibit the application of certain private land use restrictions to amateur station antennas and for other purposes. Now, I didn't really get too far into the bill to find out what the other purposes are, but basically it's to keep HOAs from restricting amateur radio operators from just putting up an antenna. Now, I'm sure there are some rules in place that restrict how tall the antenna can be or that sort of thing. I haven't read through the whole thing myself, but looking through most of this, it seems that
the word antenna is very vague.
Yeah, it is.
To ham antennas, like they could be, you know, a 3 foot long single, like a tram that we sell, for example, comes to mind, where it's maybe 3 feet. Piece of fiberglass tubing, or you can have a huge antenna that's the size of the roof of your house, basically.
Well, what they're saying about private land use restrictions, and I'm looking at the definition for that, is a publicly recorded provision, whether such provision is denoted as a covenant, deed, restriction, declaration, use restriction, covenant that runs with the land or otherwise, that touches or concerns the real estate to which the provision applies and limits or restricts the use of the real estate or imposes conditions on the use of the real estate, or a rule or regulation of a community association, whether publicly recorded or not, that limits or restricts the use of real estate or imposes conditions on the use of real estate. So that basically means an HOA, pretty much. And the what they're saying here as far as describing what they consider an antenna It includes the transmitting and receiving elements, any feed line, control enclosures, or electrical enclosures necessary for effective transmission or reception, and any support structure, guy wire, anchor, or tie-off. So that's pretty broad,
yeah, I would say. That's very broad. That's I'm surprised how broad that is.
Yeah, it is very. And they going through this, and this, I believe, is a 14-page document, a 14-page bill. And going through this, yeah, it looks like what they're saying, that there are some antennas that would require prior approval, but there are some that don't. And one that does not require prior approval would be a requirement in a private land use restriction for an amateur operator to obtain prior approval for the installation of an amateur station antenna may not be adopted or enforced with respect to any of the following types of amateur station antennas. And this is what they say here. 1 meter or less in diameter or diagonal measurement. So an antenna for use by an amateur operator that is less than 1 meter in diameter or a diagonal measurement or having the other measurements prescribed by the commission. A flagpole antenna. A flagpole capable of dual use as a flagpole and an amateur station antenna not greater than 43 feet in height above the ground. And wire antennas. Minimally obtrusive wire antennas of a length necessary for the frequency of use intended. And vertical antennas. A vertical antenna not to exceed 43 feet in height above ground, including collapsible whip and tilt-over antennas. So apparently, from what I understand here, and I may be wrong in reading this, but that's what it means. It says here.
Sounds like they're not allowed to put restrictions on antennas that fall in those categories, right?
Well, it says here existing approval. If a private land use restriction requires an amateur operator to submit an application for approval of an amateur station antenna prior to installation, after a community association or other person authorized to enforce restriction approves the application, no further approval of the antenna may be required unless there is a material change in the dimensions or structural integrity of the antennas. So, so in other words, if yeah, it says here, requirement not present in land records at the time of purchase or lease. A requirement in a private land use restriction for an amateur operator to obtain prior approval for the installation of an amateur station antenna may not be adopted or enforced if such requirement for prior approval was not presented in the publicly recorded land records prior to the purchase or the lease of the property by the amateur operator. I'm not really.
So, what do you think about
it? There's a lot of.
I don't want to get into the weeds of this bill, but like, what do you think about it? Are you in favor of the bill?
I am in favor of the bill overall. Now, as it was presented, yes, I am in favor of the bill. But if it starts to become more like what happened with ARPA, you know, that with the Parity Act, and when you get the HOAs involved and they start making changes to it and messing around with it until it kind of loses its, you know, value to the ham, I would say that is the point where I would say, well, this is probably another one that's going to bite the dust. It's not going to be very useful. And they'll do that because the associations, in my experience, and here's the thing, I've lived in HOA communities for a long, long time. I've dealt with several of them. I've actually been on the board on one of them early on, and they're different. They're all a little bit different. Some are very, very lax and say, hey, you know, it's cool, whatever. And some of them are very, very restrictive where they'll come out and practically measure your grass to make sure it's a certain, I'm not kidding, a certain length. Check the paint on your house and see if any of it's chipping off and if they're chipping it off or whatever. You know, it's really, really dumb stuff. And everything in between. And I can say that I think HOAs in general have just way too much power. Just wait there. I think a lot of them are just out of control, especially when you have some of these that are run by people that, you know, a lot of retirees and whatever that have nothing better to do with their lives than to go, you know, sit around and terrorize their neighbors. You know what I mean?
I kind of have the opposite take than you this week. And I think maybe people are going to be mad at me and disagree with me on this one. Unlike last week when you were the one calling for censorship on GMRS repeaters and you got a lot of hate.
Well, I wasn't calling. Well, we'll get into that in the Q&A, but okay, I wasn't calling on it. I was just bringing it up.
I know. You got a lot of hate.
Yeah, I did.
This time it's probably going to come in my direction because I have probably an unpopular opinion. I don't like the federal government doing this. Mm-hmm. I think government should be as local as possible. And the federal government telling HOAs what they can and can't restrict seems a little too much to me. Like if you chose to move into a community with an HOA, then you bought the house in that neighborhood. I understand it's restrictive, but you have a lot of opportunity, it seems like, to make changes. You can run and join the HOA as an officer. You have 100 neighbors probably. You can probably talk to your neighbors individually and get them to change this rule if you really want them to. You probably have a lot of power to do that because it's so local. What if you wanted to change this federal bill at some point, or there was one part that you hated? Then you have no chance to get that changed.
Well,
making laws as local as possible in an HOA seems to be the best way to go.
I would say that, once again, having been involved in these HOAs for quite a long time, my personal take on it is I think HOAs have long outlived their usefulness for the most part. But it's too late now because, what, about 60% of homes out there, depending on where you live, are in an HOA. There's some areas of the country where that figure is really, really low, and there's some parts of the country where it's considerably higher than that. I know there are a few states that, you know, 4% or 2% of people live in HOAs. That's kind of few and far between, but for the most part, they're there, and they can do a lot of damage to
but there's good things
a homeowner,
too, right?
What's that? Now,
there's good things too, right? Like,
I know what you're going to bring up.
Too. I am not an HOA fan. I do not live in an HOA community. I don't want to live in an HOA community, but it seems like they do serve a purpose. They keep your property values up, right? You don't want to be selling your house while your neighbor isn't mowing their lawn. That's going to cost you lots of money in property value. So you probably do want an HOA in that case when you put your house up for sale and you have a neighbor that's, you know, got 30 roosters and never mows their grass.
I would say, on the surface, and if you have a little history on what HOAs are all about, you know, the original, I mean, yeah, that's the one that's thrown around the most frequently. That's the reason. And on the surface, it sounds great. It sounds perfectly reasonable that, it's to protect your home values. But when you look at the figures, there are a lot of people that are trying to get out of HOAs and that actually, and this is in certain communities, in certain areas, that there is a demand for housing that is not in an HOA. In other words, a lot of them are run by HOAs, but when someone's looking to buy a house, more and more they're trying to find homes that are not in an HOA community. So it seems to me that that it actually, the home values actually go up for those that are not in HOA simply because there's a higher demand for it from a large and growing segment of home buyers. So I don't know that – I think in the beginning, the idea or the concept that HOAs keep home values up was a viable one. It held some water, had some merit. But these days, I think it's different. I think too many people don't like HOAs to the point where let me find a house without an HOA, and that actually is worth more to me than a home with an HOA. And because the housing market is the way it is today, it's harder and harder to find one. It is. So that kind of makes... But
if most people don't like HOAs, couldn't 51% of neighbors in your neighborhood vote to disband the HOA and then it's gone?
I think that depends on the community. There are some places where you can do that, where it's open, where if you have a quorum of neighbors that want to get rid of the HOA, you can do that. And I think there's a legal process involved for making that happen, but it is possible.
But if most people are actually against the HOA, then it seems like people in the HOA could just vote to eliminate it. I don't believe you that most people aren't in favor of them.
Well, here's another thought about that. And that is if a majority of people can say, hey, let's dissolve the HOA, it's once again, it's not easy to do all the time. In some places, it can't really be done, and at least not easily. And also, you have a situation where, we're going to go into the weeds on this, aren't we?
I just feel like nobody likes the HOA saying, oh, your grass is a quarter inch too long. But also, nobody wants the neighbor that's never mowing their grass and has 30 roosters.
True, but it doesn't prevent a lot of things. Like, look at some of these HOAs out there now where you're having an issue. And we're having a serious issue in this country in some places where squatters are becoming a real problem. And some of these squatters are going in to take over these homes in HOAs. And isn't that one of the things that an HOA is supposed to presumably kind of protect the homeowner against, and yet that's not happening? So I would say that I think HOAs are pretty much useless in that regard.
A squatter, an HOA doesn't have the power to go in and remove people from your house.
They have the power to go in and remove you from your house if they have a problem with you. And
do they?
Well, I mean, if they can put a lien on your house, they can foreclose on it in certain circumstances. They can impose fines on it that make it very, very difficult to stay there. Mm-hmm. You know, and say for instance, in the erection of an antenna, if they don't like the fact the antenna's there and the ham won't take it down, refuses to take it down, they can impose all kinds of fines and restrictions on that homeowner to force him to either force him to take it down or to put him in a situation where he's forced to vacate in some ways.
They can definitely put liens on your property so that if you sell it, you have to settle those liens.
I have read about situations where homeowners have actually been faced with jail time. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is pretty extreme stuff, but this is the power that a lot of HOAs have. Now, the other thing I was going to mention when you were going to bring this up, and I didn't really want to get in the weeds on this, as I said before, but let's go there for just a second. A lot of HOAs, because of the fact that a lot of people don't want to participate in their HOA for various reasons. One, some of them, they don't have the time. Some of them, they don't have the energy. Some of them just don't want to be involved at all for various reasons. It gets to the point that, okay, the HOA still has their charter and their rules saying that, well, you know, we have to govern this. And if we can't do that, ourselves as a community, then we have to send it out and have a third party do it. And that's where a lot of these community management companies come in. And that's where you get into real trouble. Like our HOA is managed by, I mean, we do have a board such as it is, but our community is managed by a community management company. And they're the ones that can really do some damage to the homeowner in the sense that they go after him. They can be really, what's the term? The neighborhood Nazi. So it's when it gets to that point where the HOA is actually governed or run or managed by a third party management company, that's where it becomes very difficult for the homeowner to, you know, go to the HOA and say, hey, you know, I don't like this.
I would still say that I like that the opportunity exists at the HOA level for you to go talk to your neighbors and have a rule changed. There are HOA meetings a few times a year, right? Once a quarter, generally, something like that.
It depends. It depends on the HOA. We had one HOA I was in, we had meetings once a month. The HOA that I'm part of now, they have monthly meetings, but they're basically just board meetings. And it's not something that you usually most of the members actually go to. What they do have is they have an annual meeting. And that's one where everybody goes to, or everyone's invited to, or they cover the annual stuff and they vote for whatever officers are going to have for the next year and that sort of thing. But let me tell you something, at least the one in our community is kind of a joke, because they are, like, for instance, and this is what happened to me this past year. I went to the annual meeting. They presented the budget for the coming year. Of course, they raise our rates as they always do. And they never go down. But they presented the budget and gave everybody copy. And they said, okay, well, we're going to vote on this. And then at the meeting, you know, it was brought up, well, we don't have a quorum to vote. Well, the thing is, they still have to pass this budget because it's about to go into to be enacted and go into effect. So they say, well, we're going to vote to have, you know, vote this in. So, you know, all those in favor say aye. You know, everybody there going aye. You know, no. That's pretty much the end of a choice. And so I piped in and I said, well, wait a minute. If we don't have a quorum to vote, how can we vote on this? And they said, well, we've got to pass that. And I said, well, what if I don't like this? And they said, well, all those not in favor say nay. And I'm like, nay. And they say, okay, well, it passes. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, we didn't even have any discussion about this. And they go, well, we don't have a quorum. I'm like, well, you know, if you don't have a quorum, why are we voting on this? This is a totally useless vote. Because they knew it was going to pass anyway. They said, well, it's just going to pass anyway, whether there's a vote or not. I'm like, well, why are we voting? What was the point?
Good point.
And good they point. Say, well, it's just a formality. I'm like, well, okay. Well. And that's one of those reasons why I think, and these HOAs are just a joke.
Look, I know there's a lot of problems with HOA. You a lot of times, people that will be good at running an HOA don't have the time to run an HOA. So you end up electing people with too much time on their hands. And yeah, that leads to bad things.
Yeah. And I know, because I had a friend of mine who was in an HOA, and she was just, they really picked on her. I mean, they had some guy come to their house and pick on every little thing. And it wasn't cheap to fix these things. And they'd give her so many days to do it, or she was going to be, you know, they were going to put a lien on her property. She finally moved out. She finally sold the place and moved out because she just couldn't deal with it anymore. She was in a townhouse or condo, and it was just so frustrating to her. So, I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I still, where my problem comes in is I guess I'm sort of libertarian minded. I don't like the top down approach. If the federal government doesn't need to do something, it should. The federal government does way too much stuff, in my opinion. We're in incredible debt. There's too much that they're taking on. I think government should generally be as local as possible. So. Even though it goes against, I'm sure, what a lot of our customers are going to believe, I do feel like this shouldn't be something that's implemented top down.
Well, a lot of the things that the HOAs do in the first place is they are doing things that really should be in the jurisdiction of a city or a county government. And some of their rules kind of, they're supposed to, whatever rules they implement are supposed to, you know, not supersede city and county governments, but, or replace them. But a lot of the city and county governments like the HOAs because they're doing their work for them. They don't have to do anything. They're letting the HOAs do it and take care of it.
I agree with that.
That's why we have some of these issues. But getting back to the, and I know we strayed really, really far away from the subject, but it does have to do with what could happen here with the ham antennas. These bills have been introduced before, and usually they either get shot down some way or they die out or something like that. And this is another one that's coming. So I think this is important for amateur radio operators who want to have this kind of thing implemented where they can put up their antennas within reason. But, you know, they also perform – I think this is important for the community. I think it's important for the community as a whole because you've got an – you've got someone there that is monitoring, that's there to monitoring the airways and there to help if there is a disaster or an emergency. There are a lot of benefits
There are a lot of great reasons to have a ham in your neighborhood.
Yeah.
And it should be hams in a neighborhood are a great thing. And sure. Most people just probably need to be educated on the benefits of having a ham nearby.
Yep. You get a disaster, you get a tornado run through part of your neighborhood and the ham has his, he can put up an emergency station and go out there and get first responders out there. I mean, this happens. So, there are a lot of reasons for having, even during a hurricane or some other event where all other forms of communication go down and all the people in the local neighborhood have to go to is that ham that can get out, that can get the communications out and get help to them. So, yeah, absolutely. There are definite advantages to this.
But it just seems like an easy sell to me. If you go to your HOA meeting and say, here's all the benefits of having a ham in your neighborhood, but let's change this rule so I can put an antenna up.
Yeah.
It seems like it shouldn't be a hard sell.
No, I would agree with that. And now, in addition to the federal bill, it's just worth mentioning that South Carolina also has a bill, you know, for South Carolina. You're in South Carolina, and this is something that that's of interest, personal interest to you, that, hey, they're putting one in called the Amateur Radio Antenna Protection Act. I think that's what that one's called. So that one's also going through the South Carolina House, and they have quite a number of sponsors. And by the way, there are a lot of hams in South Carolina. We have a really active ham community in the state and in our local area where we are by Two-Way Radios. So this is of interest to a lot of them. But it comes back down to this. What are the chances of any of these bills passing? You know, what's the status of these bills? And at the time of this episode, in April of 2024, the bill that's in the U.S. Congress right now is in the first stage of the legislative process. And it has 9 co-sponsors, 5 Republicans, 4 Democrats. And according to GovTrack.us, which is where I got this statistic from, this bill has a 2% chance of being enacted. and basically, well, that they're basing it on a few things here. They're basing it on an 8% chance of getting past committee, only 11% of bills have made it past committee, and only 2% were enacted in 2021 through 2023. So it's they're kind of basing it on past performance of bills that went through. And they factored in things such as the bill being introduced in the first year of the Congress, the sponsors in the majority party, and at least 1/3 of the bill's co-sponsors are from the minority party. And those are all pros for this because that's the case for this bill. The things that can hurt it, at least 2 co-sponsors serve on a committee to which the bill has been referred. That doesn't seem to really be the case here. The bill was referred to the House and Energy to the House Energy and Commerce, which apparently I guess they can get stuck there. I don't know what the situation is with it right now. But this bill was also a reintroduction of H.R. 9670 from the previous section of Congress, which basically didn't pass or go anywhere. So based on the past performance, that kind of works against this bill too. So
2%.
Yeah, pretty much 2% on that. And the South Carolina bill is in committee, and we don't know how long it's going to be there or what's going to happen to it. So whether the amateurs get their antennas in their HOAs, probably not looking
too
good. Yeah, we'll see, but it's probably not looking real good at this point. But it's definitely worth – you know what? Write your congressperson. That's what to do. And say, hey, support this bill. Look at this bill. You know? I think that's – I guess that's the best we can do at this point. So what do you think here? You think you don't have to worry about it anyway right now. You can erect whatever antenna you want right now, right?
I'm not in an HOA. It really doesn't impact me.
So it works for you.
I put up all the antennas I want, and they can be as big as I want them to be.
All right. Any other final thoughts on this?
I think I covered it. I'm not you know, I don't really care either way. If I had to, I would probably not pass it if it were my choice. If it passes, we'll write a blog about it. I'll be happy. Our customers will be happy.
Yeah. Well, the HOAs be happy. Probably. No, it depends on what happens with it, you know, between now and then. If they get their hands on it and change it all up the way they want it. I don't know. We'll see. All right. Well, we have some comments and questions from our blog and our forum at twowayradioforum.com. And they're mostly comments. And wow, do we have some comments, because
I hope you read some of the hate ones that you got from last week.
I will. And these are all pretty much from episode 188, which is when we were discussing censorship on GMRS repeaters. And well, some of them are pretty lengthy. I'm not going to read the really, really lengthy ones, but I am going to touch on some of these others. This first one comes from Troy. And Troy says, their repeater, their rules. If they do not want you on the repeater, they are not violating your right to be on the air. They are just telling you you can't use their equipment. You can find another repeater or put up your own with a different tone. Since there is no coordination, you can have several repeaters in the same pair but using different tones. And that's from Troy. And we actually said that on the podcast, if I recall.
Yeah, that's it summarizes my viewpoint pretty well.
Yeah. We actually said it, and I agreed with that pretty much. I did. Another one, this is from Jay. Jay also concurs. They own the repeater, so they make the rules. Deal with it. That's from Jay. John, let's see. There was one from John here that I wanted to read, and he says, a repeater is private property. The owner of said repeater property can totally decide who uses the private property and what goes on the repeater. The output frequency is still available for anyone to use, and that's from John. Let's see. I can read this one from Paul. Paul says, if you have a genuine approved GMRS radio, CTCSS is intended to prevent annoying interference or conversations from people you don't want to hear being heard. So you will, as a result, cause interference to other users that you can't hear. Nobody doing anything wrong, just using what the license allows. You might have the right to control who uses the repeaters, but equal, there's no right to refrain from using a channel you're excluded from. Bit of a mess. In the UK, we have some simple-to-use business channels with a blanket license and simple system. You choose a frequency and your own CTCSS. No guarantee of privacy, exclusivity, or freedom from interference. In general, it works, and that's from Paul. And that was kind of what I was sort of getting at towards the end of the last part of the show. And And also, Sean has one here that's very good, and this is kind of long because he goes into the rules, so I won't read all of that. But in summary, he says, thank you for another good podcast. This one makes you go, I agree with the idea that the repeater owner sets the rules for his machine as long as they don't contradict FCC regulations. Not that I agree with everything FCC. As far as having an English-only rule, Title 47, Chapter 1, Subchapter D, Part 95, Subpart E, in 95.1705 states, individual licensee responsibility. The holder of an individual license to operate GMRS stations is responsible at all times for the proper operation of the stations in compliance with all applicable rules in this part. Now, and we did touch on that as well, saying that, you know what, and I think you mentioned that, that, you know what, the repeater, that's under the operator's license, and anything anybody says or does on that repeater, they're ultimately responsible for. So they are, they have a vested interest in kind of, you know, having some rules as to how that repeater can be used. And that makes total sense.
Sure.
But here are a couple that, that kind of threw me. Well, there was one on YouTube where, somebody said, Rick, you know, you kind of flip-flop back and forth, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing this from memory, but he said, Rick, you kind of flip-flop back and forth because on the one hand, you were agreeing that you repeat your rules, and then you would come back and say, but what about this? And I'm like, well, yeah, because that's how we generally conduct the show. We put out all the questions. I totally agree with the your repeat or your rules. That wasn't an issue. What I was doing was just simply bringing up the questions, you know, all the different questions and saying, well, what about this? What about that? That was pretty much it.
What if their rules conflicts with the FCC rules? Where do you fall then?
Yeah. I did bring that up too. But
what's your opinion?
If it conflicts with the FCC rules, that comes back to the bit, well, you know what? You can put up a repeater, your own repeater. But that's where we got into the last 5 minutes of the show where we were saying, well, wait a minute. You can only have so many repeaters in a certain area where there are – because there are only 8 repeater frequencies. And what if there are so many repeaters out there and you can't get your repeater up and operational where everyone can hear you because all the other repeaters in the area are kind of drowning you out there. You can't really get on the air. And that's really what the core of this was that, well, wait a minute, maybe the FCC.
So you don't believe that a repeater owner should be able to set rules if they're not in line with the FCC?
No. What I'm saying is that, if they're in non-line, if they violate the FCC rules, absolutely. You know, your repeater, your rules, unless they violate the FCC rules, and then the repeater owner's in trouble anyway. So I don't think that's usually going to be a situation. But when it comes down to being able to put up your own repeater and setting your own rules, as long as they comply with the FCC rules overall, but you can't get through or you can't get out there because all the other repeaters are kind of are in the way and that sort of thing. That's where it gets into what our final discussion was there. It's like, well, maybe we just don't have enough repeater channels. Maybe the FCC needs to go in there and kind of revamp GMRS a little bit so that it's a little bit, you know, we have more to work with. That was basically the end game here for the argument for this. Was, hey, you know, the FCC should come in, give us more repeater frequencies so there's more opportunity to do that so everyone's not stepping over everyone else with their repeaters. And
well, I'm all for more channels.
Yeah, exactly. Now, here's one. I did want to read one more here, and this was from Fred because I thought this was I thought this was very interesting. Fred says, I made it to about 11 minutes, and that was all I could stand. I am trustee for a half a dozen or so VHF, UHF, analog and digital repeaters in this area of North Central Texas, and I assure you that there are protocols, not rules per se, to follow that are not listed in Part 97 or 95. If those protocols are ignored or disregarded or flaunted, you can bet the repeater will be shut down. It is our repeater, it is our equipment, meaning the club organization that funds it, maintains it, and ensures that it meets regulatory compliance. We are the repeater gods, if you will, and one either complies or is banned. It's a very simple concept, except to Marxists, who don't understand private ownership of anything. If one does not agree, they can go get their own frequency allocation, then put their own repeater on the air and allow whatever conduct they so choose. As for the guy's English-only rule, think of it this way. If you are not fluent in Spanish or any other language, then you have no idea if that conversation is violating any of the FCC rules or, for that matter, anything that might bring Homeland Security down on that repeater trustee for allowing said violation to occur and continue. It is wonderful that we live in a country where you are free to have a blog that expresses opinions, no matter how misguided they might be. And that's from Fred. And I thoroughly enjoyed that one. I did.
I don't disagree with him.
No, because I don't disagree with him either.
Strongly worded.
I don't disagree with him either, but I think he kind of missed the point of what we were trying to state, especially in the last 10 minutes or so of the podcast. And he said he made it through about 11 minutes, so he didn't hear the whole thing. He heard, you know, the part where I was bringing up the initial questions. And pretty much probably assumed that was everybody's stance on it. And we're all like anti, you know, I don't know, like we're all Marxists or something. I don't know. but no, that your repeater, your rules. Absolutely. I have no issue with that at all. And didn't. You know, I'm just trying to bring up the questions that people are going to ask, or that, you know, a lot of people might ask and say, well, what about this? What about that? And I think you're
just asking questions.
Pretty much just asking the questions. So maybe next episode you can be the good cop or you can be the bad cop and I can be the good. Oh, wait a minute. That's what you're doing on this episode, right?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I'll get some negative comments.
Maybe we'll both get negative comments.
This will be my turn.
Probably all from all the HOA presidents and stuff. I don't know. Well, I guess that does it for our comments and questions in this episode. Send in your comments and questions for Danny or myself to show@2WayRadios.com. If you want to know more about today's topic or about 2-Way Radios in general, check out our forum discussions at 2wayradioforum.com. You can subscribe to the 2-Way Radio Show directly from our website at 2wayradioshow.com or hear it on Apple Podcasts, Blueberry.com, iHeartRadio, or PodcastIndex.org, or anywhere else you can find a podcast. And you can subscribe by email. Just click the subscribe by email button on the 2-Way Radio Show podcast page at 2wayradioshow.com. Enter your email address and you'll get the latest episode of the 2-Way Radio Show as soon as it comes out. All right. Well, I guess that's kind of it. Before we go, any final comment?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, today's show is sponsored by buy2wayradios.com. Whether you're searching for two-way radios for general consumer or business use, Buy2Way Radios can help you find the best solution for your needs. Enter the promo code SHOW at checkout and save an additional 5% off your order. Give us a call at 1-800-584-1445 or enter our live chat at buy2wayradios.com. Well, everyone, as always, thanks for listening. And until next time, for the Two-Way Radio Show, I'm Rick Savoia.
And I'm Danny Feimster.
And we're out.